prophecies in some form or other indicating a preview of events to come have been of great interest to all from time immemorial. One is, of course, familiar with well-known predictions of Nostradamus, Cairo, and so on. It may be there are a few who may laugh at such predictions and appear skeptic, but I feel that inwardly they cherish a secret belief and want to know about them and are interested in all those prophecies. There have been also the famous biblical prophecies, also prophecies in the Hindu Puranas or mythological stories regarding events to come in the Kali Yuga or the Black Age. One also finds, for instance, prophecies in some of the later Buddhist writings, as for instance in the writings of the famous teacher Padma Sambhava, who had predicted as early as 600 AD the breakup of Tibet because of the invasion of the Chinese. He had even indicated in his works in great detail some of the sufferings to which the Tibetans were subjected to when the country was invaded by China. Now, prophecies are of various grades, and one can also say various shades. Start right from crystal gazing, and there are quite a number in the world who claim that they can prophesy everything that is to happen in the future through such a process. Then there are the psychical seances, astrological readings, clairvoyance of various degrees, right up to what you may call true spiritual farsightedness, when one is able to deliberately project one's consciousness into the records of the future. Those to whom one can say the future lies like an open book. It's rather interesting that in the early part of the 19th century, there lived a saint in South India, very near Adyar. He comes from the same place as I happen to come, but I am not related to him, nor am I saintly. His name was Ramalinga Swami. He was a real Swami, not some of those who styled themselves as gurus and swamis in these days. He worked for vegetarianism in India. Of course, it's rather strange, isn't it? Somebody has to work for vegetarianism in India, a land where the Buddha had walked and religion like Jainism has flourished, which believes in ahimsa or non-injury to all beings. Still, he had to work, and he worked for vegetarianism, and he also tried to work for the revival of Hindu religion and culture. It was a time when India was looking very much to the West and thought that its own tradition and culture had nothing to offer as far as progress was concerned. So he tried to work for these things for the people. He was also a poet, But he wrote his poems, his verses in the Tamil language, the local language where he lived. And his teachings are in immortal classics, but in Tamil. Now he found that the people would not listen to him. He tried to tell them that the Hindu religion and the culture is very, very ancient and has much to offer, food for thought, and there were many things which one could find useful for progress. But the people would not listen to him. So he prophesied, and it is there in his works, the coming to India of Colonel Olcott and H.P. Blavatsky. Of course, he didn't mention them by name, but he said that there will come a Russian lady accompanied by an American gentleman. And he said they will not only work for universal brotherhood, but they will also work for the revival of the Hindu religion and culture. And he further added, you will listen to them because they will come in a Western body, because India was then enamored of the West. And we know that this prophecy surely came true, because in 1875, we know the Theosophical Society was founded, and 3 years later they came to India and established the headquarters at Adyar. And they not only worked for revival of the Hindu religion, but all other religions. Now what does H.P. Blavatsky think of prophecies? Referring to the astrological or zodiacal prophecies, H.P.B. says that many of these are only the periodical laws in nature. She says the prophecy regarding the coming of Christ is that related to the sign of Pisces or Pisces. My pronunciation is always, I do not know. Pisces, yes. Which is associated with the coming of a world teacher. So what seems to be astrological predictions, according to H.P.B., are only readings of the unerring law of karma. She writes in her Secret Doctrine, and this occurs in Volume 2 of the Adyar edition of the Secret Doctrine. If you are interested, you can look up. It's on page 366. She says, there is a predestination in the history of races and nations, even as it is in the geological life of a globe. This is closely related to karmic or cyclic law. So according to her, all that happens is preordained by the karmic law. But man, out of ignorance, calls them acts of providence or chance. Our destiny is written in the stars. Now, astrologers base their prophecies on events that have happened under similar conjunctions of constellations. Hundreds of years ago, there might have been certain constellations, a combination of constellations, or you know, the planetary conjunctions, and some things might have happened, and based on that, when similar conjunctions happen, they predict accordingly similar events. But according to H.P.B., all these are simply knowledge based on mathematically precise computations. That's what she says. To foresee in advance events led by the karmic cycle, zodiacal records are there for occultists to study and to know. So she brushes aside chance happenings. Now, one more question I would like to consider before we think of some prophecies relative to present times. If everything is preordained, does it mean events are just cogs in the wheel of time? Perhaps to the majority of humanity it is so. But I feel there is such a thing as free will of man. And man can, by understanding, turn a catastrophe to come into a happening of value and use it for furtherance of the group or the nation or the race or for himself. In the same manner, man, by his stupidity and ego-centeredness, can turn the tide of events and create a chaos, as he is trying to do now in the world. Now, one can cite many examples for this. You take in my own subcontinent the breakup of India. Surely, I don't think that was preordained. It was more because of the stupidity of the politicians that India had to be divided into what it is now. The ecological crisis, still I don't think a solution has been found for that, still going on. So our destiny is written in the stars to a certain extent, but I feel to man these are indications of turn of events, or you can say weak spots in his character or life. But he can, because of the gift of the manas, with wisdom and understanding, try to soften the blow or use it to advantage or change events. It is possible, so we need not just stay tight and say, it's written in the stars, nothing can be done. We can, using our understanding, try to get the best out of any happening. Now coming to some prophecies. In the Secret Doctrine, this is in volume 1, page 65, H.P.B. mentions the prophecy in the first volume of the prophetic record for the Black Age, Kali Yuga, concerning the end of the first period of Kali Yuga. To quote H.P.B., she says, "We have not long to wait, and many of us will witness the dawn of the new cycle, at the end of which not a few accounts will be settled and squared between the races." Now we see all over the world, in almost every country, without exception, in all nations, the settling of scores, the racial scores, such as is happening between the black and the white in the United States of America. The question of Africa for the Africans, thousands who had worked for the development of the country, uprooted from the soil where they had, you can say, shed their blood as it were. The difficulties which Britain is unfortunately facing, perhaps due to not too wise colonial policies in the past. If you take my own country, India, the persecution of the Harijans or the scheduled castes backward classes as they are called by the Brahmins in the past, what is happening now, the state from which I come, the ruling party belongs to this backward community, and we Brahmins are the persecuted class now. It's very difficult for a Brahmin boy or girl, however brilliant he or she may be, to get, for instance, even an ordinary thing as a seat in one of the technological colleges. So it's just a settling of the score, and we have to just look at it and hope that one day it will sort of balance and settle down. Now the Hindu-Muslim question in the subcontinent, which is still a problem there. So you see there is unrest everywhere, and probably this is because of the settling of these scores. And there are also fresh outcomes, such as, for instance, between Pakistan and Bangladesh. It is a score which has still to be settled by both sides for all the cruelty and the ruthlessness which has been sort of come into play during this question. How about man's ruthless exploitation of nature? That's an ecological score which is probably still to be settled, unless man becomes a little bit wiser and less selfish. Man's cruelty to animals. I feel this is a score which will never get settled for some time to come, because so much has man filled this earth with his ruthlessness and cruelty towards the animals. But man is continuously facing nature's onslaughts on him. The hurricanes, the earthquakes, the drought. Seems to be a problem all over the world this year, the drought, tidal waves, and new diseases. Every time a new medicine is put forth on the market, you hear of new diseases one has never heard of. Now perhaps you might think I am sounding a very pessimistic note regarding man's future. But again, if you turn to HPB, I don't want you to go back and think that I swear on HPB, but it's interesting because she has given some very deep thought to all these things in that monumental work, The Secret Doctrine. She covers this, fortunately, with a very hopeful note. After all the scores are settled, the law of evolution is now carrying us along the ascending arc of our cycle, when the effects will be once more re-merged into and re-become the now neutralized causes. All things affected by the former will have regained their original harmony. So peace and harmony is there for humanity, maybe in the far off future. Maybe some of us may not live the day. We have to come back in a new body to experience this peace and happiness. Now the Hindu Puranas also speak of the dawn of the next period or age, when dharma or righteousness will once more reign supreme. So there is a hopeful note regarding this. Now HPB in another place refers to the prophecy of the Promethean myth. This refers to the last of the mysteries of cyclic transformations, in the series of which mankind had passed from ethereal to the solid physical state as we are now, from spiritual to physiological procreation, and is now on the opposite arc of the cycle, the second phase of its primitive state, when woman knew no man and human progeny was created, not begotten. And HPB has prophesied, after giving this, that state will return to it, that is to humanity, and to the world at large, when the latter shall discover and really appreciate the truths which underlie this vast problem of sex. It will be like the light that never was on sea or land, and has come to men through the Theosophical Society. That light will lead on and up to true spiritual intuition. And what happens then? HPB says, when that true spiritual intuition comes, the world will have a race of Buddhas and Christ. Lovely, isn't it, to think of? For the world will have discovered that individuals have it in their own powers to procreate Buddha-like children. But again, there is a free will and choice given to man, Buddha-like children or demons. When that knowledge comes, all dogmatic religions, and with these the demons, will die out. Now in this prophecy of HPB, several things are involved related to present times. The first is truths underlying the problem of sex. In the world, everywhere now, in the West as well as in the East, perhaps not to such an extent, but still it is fast coming into the Eastern countries also, a certain permissiveness has come in regarding sex. There is not so much sanctity attached to marriage as you and I might consider marriage. Young people in love, they just want to live together without going through the formality of a wedding. Now this might be a reaction to various taboos on sex. Now there is, particularly amongst the young, such free mixing and things about which one does not generally talk or freely discussed with no inhibition whatsoever. So if you want to build the bridge, the generation gap, you must be prepared for all this. Only then you can really have a real communication with the young people. I feel perhaps this is a transitional stage when there will arise a revulsion for sex because of too much free mixing. And creation of progeny as it exists now might perhaps give way to what HPB envisages, that is, procreation. Freed of sensuality and lust, it will be a creation when children Buddha-like will be born, because the foundation for all such births is free of all lusting. Perhaps the younger generation are already being aware of truths underlying the problem of sex. I'm saying perhaps. And creation becoming just an act pure and simple without the various other things which are attached to it, it will be just an expression of the inner harmony that will prevail. So once the problems that go with the sex are not there, once there is no lusting or craving, you find this becomes purified, perhaps raised to a higher level. And the mind, freed of all such cravings, which weigh it down, there rises an inner weightlessness, and the fog which clouds the mind, kama, disappears. So once again, reaching its crystal clear state, what HBB has envisaged, it will be possible for the buddhic light to shine through and enlighten the mind. And this is the light of the spiritual intuition. So this is a possibility, and we should try to look beneath the confusion which exists now regarding sex and really try to understand it. Now, there is another significant prophecy of HPB, and this is in volume 5 of the Secret Doctrine under the section related to Tsongkhapa. Now reference is here made to the commandments of Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa is supposed to be a great Tibetan teacher who is considered an incarnation of the Buddha. Now this is what she writes. Among the commandments of Tsongkhapa, there is one that enjoins the arhats. The arhats are men who have come to a certain stage of development or expansion in their consciousness. There is one that enjoins the arhats to make an attempt to enlighten the world. Every century at a specified period of the cycle. Now we can of course find elsewhere in the theosophical literature references to, for instance, the centennial impulses given from on high, as it were. And Theosophical Society, the founding of it, is considered this one such push given to the world in order to lift it up to a higher level. Now, to continue from the Secret Doctrine, she says, up to the present day, this is the commandments of Tsongkhapa, none of these attempts have been very successful. That is, the attempts of the arhats, they have not been fully successful. Failure has followed failure. Can we explain the fact by the light of a certain prophecy? This is HPB's question, and she writes, she gives the prophecy. It is said, up to the time when the great jewel of wisdom condescends to be reborn in the land of the failings, jewel of wisdom is the Buddha. Land of the failings, it is P-H-E-L-I-N-G-S. Failings means Westerners in the Tibetan language. So up to the time when the great jewel of wisdom condescends to be reborn in the land of the Westerners, the failings, and appearing as the spiritual conqueror, destroys the errors and ignorance of the ages, it will be of little use to try to uproot the misconceptions of Palingpa, that is, the Westerners. Her sons will listen to no one. So until, according to this prophecy of Tsongkhapa, the jewel of wisdom, that is, the Buddha, condescends to be born, taking a Western body among the Western civilization, it is said, you cannot try to spiritualize the world. Now, Tsongkhapa is, as I said, an incarnation of the Buddha. Now, there is a great deal of interest now in Buddhism in the West. Not only in the West means not Western countries, but Western civilization, which includes Australia, New Zealand, and all that. Now, with the Tibetan lamas, because of the invasion of Tibet by the Chinese, they are scattered all over the world. And many of them took the many occult works of deep wisdom with them as they left Tibet. And these occult works are being translated and given to the West. I know, for instance, these translations are being brought out by a group in the Berkeley University in California and also in the London University. So you find a number of books by Gunther and Snellgrove, which are translations of some of the classics which these lamas took out of Tibet. Now, perhaps all this, though the way it has happened, is not something very nice, because the Tibetans were subjected to, and even now, those who are still in Tibet, they are subjected to a great deal of cruelty because of the communist Chinese. But still, you can say that in spite of all this, there always, every circumstance, however uncomfortable or bad it is, something good it is turned to in order to get something good out of it. And so, in spite of all the cruelty the Tibetans have been subject to, perhaps out of this, a good has come out, that is to prepare the ground for the great jewel of wisdom, so to be condescending enough to be reborn, but this time not in the East but in the West. So the great interest in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, particularly in the West, probably this is a preparation for the event to come. Of course, we might come back in a newer body and maybe we might find ourselves disciples of this great jewel of wisdom when he comes back in a Western body. Now, the secret doctrine further adds, another prophecy declares that the secret doctrine shall remain in all its purity in Tibet only to the day that it is kept free from foreign invasion. This is the true key to Tibetan exclusiveness. One of the reasons why Tibet had been exclusive all these years is in order to keep the wisdom pure. But what has happened after the breakup of Tibet, we find in the world there is so much pseudo-occultism which passes off as the secret doctrine in present times. All kinds of psychical experiments, various things, clairvoyance of various grades, everything passes off, even witchcraft passes off as yoga and occultism. So this is an indication of what HPB had prophesied. And yet, as I mentioned, but for the breakup of Tibet, the world would never had access to all the deep wisdom of Tibet. Perhaps this is necessary, though not in the plan, to pave the foundation for the jewel of wisdom to reincarnate in the West. As I mentioned in the beginning, as long ago as 600 AD, the great teacher Padmasambhava has recorded in his works in great detail everything about the Tibet, breaking off of Tibet, and the sufferings which the Tibetans would be subjected to. If you are interested, it is contained in a book called the esoteric teachings of the Tibetan Tantra, which is edited by Charles Muses. I think it is a Swiss publication. Now, in our literature, leaving aside all these prophecies, a great deal is said about the future of mankind. Prophecies about the sixth root race, the development of Buddhic consciousness,
the
conditions in which man will live, the powers he would acquire. Now, with all due respect to all the seers who have prophesied all this, looking into the records of the future, I would like to pose the question, including myself, to all members: how do such prophecies help man in his onward journey? Can all that foretold happen just sudden on a minute? Will the Buddhi in us flower out all on a sudden one fine morning in a far off date? You just wake up and you find your Buddhi opening out, as it were. Should we not start working for it, laying the foundation for it now? The keen scientific mind, taking in many details, and which has brought in so much along technological lines, that did not come out suddenly on a minute. Man had been deliberately working at it. So I feel that unless we try to work at it, work for it, the prophecies might be all wonderful, but you will find the day will come and it will just flow above our heads if we do not work for it towards that end. Now, HPB again prophesied the danger threatening mankind of the secret of the atom, if known to man, before he has matured enough in wisdom to use it wisely. Now, many of us quote her words, as I am quoting now HPB's words, to explain the various tangles which exist in the world at present, the tensions. But how many of us, and this is a challenge which I would like to pose to myself too, how many of us, theosophists, give thought to this and with all earnestness work for a change to lessen the tension in the world in our own small ways? So the next question arises: to what end or purpose are these prophecies? I feel prophecies can be taken as the task which lie ahead for man to fulfill. They can stimulate and encourage him in his efforts to achieve those ends, or try to avert such catastrophic ends by the great gift of his, namely the mind or the manas. I don't think any miracle will enable us to use the Buddhi unless we lay the foundation for it now. 600 years hence, we will not be very much better off in evolution for knowing all about the sixth root race now, unless we start working for it. Unless we start our changing our ways of life and wean the mind more and more away from kama, or the lower passions, or selfishness. I feel human progress is not a continuous, unaccelerated process. It can be achieved only by a complicated flow of factors brought into interaction with one another. An interaction where old barriers have to be broken up and worn out ideas have to be given up. So it needs an awareness of ideas calling for change and reform in some direction emerging out of the future. So are we prepared even to give up some of our dogmatic so-called theosophical ideas? This is a question which perhaps some of you might find it shocking, but it is well we face it. Our theosophy also might become dogmatic. Our approaches also might become dogmatic. And we must be prepared to change to newer ways in order to cope with the present trend, for instance, among the younger generation. And ideas, at the same time, if we just change for the sake of changing, then ideas which are on the borderline between the past and the future, they might be missed. So one has to be very sure of oneself. What is it that we have to give up to change? So prophecies can be of value if those who aspire toward progress are keenly perceptive and alert, but at the same time bold enough to seize all opportunities opening to newer and better ways of approach. So we can all put ourselves the question, are we prepared to change ourselves in our approaches, in our ways of living? As members of the Theosophical Society, we ought to be identified all the time with the next step of human progress. Now, the Theosophical Society exists only for that purpose. A master of wisdom has said, Theosophy is to be made practical. Words which are to be interpreted in no narrow sense. Now, our theosophy, if you can call it our theosophy, it has to be expressed not only in a spirit which influences our daily activities, but also connected with that vision of perfection which is envisaged by HPB and others. Now, are we prepared to do that, bring it into our daily life, as well as try to take it up to that level envisaged by our leaders? It has also been indicated what is to be the task of the Theosophical Society. In one of the Mahatma letters, it is said, the crest wave of intellectual advancement must be taken hold of and guided into spirituality. We must note the word spirituality, not guided into spurious forms of psychism and other phenomena. Now, we are to be forward guard in steering the world thought out of the ruts of customs and conventions. We ought to be out of the routine, the established patterns of thought and behavior. In many of these things, we have to be on the forward guard. How many of us, I know myself, even we theosophists, we go from ashrama to ashrama, from guru to guru, when we don't realize we are in an ashrama where we get the most, perhaps, deepest approach to that truth, given to us perhaps in a very easy way. So we don't realize that. So are we really guiding the crest wave of intellectual advancement into spirituality? We can do that if we are sure that the theosophy we know is really what it is intended to be. If we do not catch the depths of it, then of course we run from one country to another, from one ashrama to another, from one guru to another, eventually not finding, we just go round and round like the dog chasing its tail. So it may be well to ask ourselves the question, are we concerned with all these prophetic statements regarding what the future ought to be? Theosophy has to be made practical. Perhaps these are not spectacular statements, but they are concerned with vital issues. Now, if we are concerned, what are we doing about it? It's a question which each one of us can put to ourselves, not point the finger at somebody. I always say when you point one finger at somebody, three points at you. So be sure of that when you say that you have not done it. Now H.P. Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine speaks of an omnipresent, eternal, boundless, immutable principle beyond human conception and thought, just quoting the first fundamental proposition. And she says the fundamental identity of all souls with the universal oversoul. Now all religions and philosophies envisage a future for man when he can know for himself this fundamental identity with all souls and with that boundless eternal principle. We also know in the first of the three great truths, it is said, the soul of man is immortal and its future is the future of a thing whose growth and splendor has no limit. Now it is a future revealed to us as the plan of God for humanity. Perhaps it is the most wonderful of all prophecies, though we may not think of it as a prophecy, because there is nothing exciting about it from the worldly point of view. So can this glorious future of feeling one with that boundless principle happen as a routine matter? Such truths, I feel, are placed before us so that we can take ourselves on hand and work at it, remold ourselves. So it is not the event to come which is important, but what is to be done here and now so that that event is possible. So in terms of what is happening in the world, there is a real seeking. We find that everywhere, you can't deny that. There is yearning among the young people for the deeper values of life. There is a great deal of interest in meditation and yoga. There is interest in facts concerning reincarnation. It is no more a sort of taboo. You can talk about it in the West. Now, with all the knowledge which is given to us as members of the Theosophical Society, we can help in turning the interest away from sensational phenomena in order to find, help them to find the center of beauty, the reality within themselves. The interest in meditation can be used to help them in probing the inward, fathomless space in oneself. It can be used as a way to listen to that greatest of all the prophesier, namely the voice within us. Perhaps we don't think of it as a prophesier, the voice of the great silence which is within. So this is the future that awaits man, and that is the heart of yoga. So I feel prophecies are of value only if we try and work towards the goal which is envisaged. If a catastrophe is prophesied, to try and build up positive forces, good influences which can avert that or bring about what you may call a soft landing. If we wait for time to pass by to happen, it will never happen. I feel the sun of reality can rise only when our horizons are clear. Now, are our horizons clear? When we look for it, are we ready to receive it? We may easily pass by it unnoticed. Neither can these things be approached mentally. Man has to turn within himself by what is called in Eastern thought tapas, can perceive in himself new horizons, greater mountains, more beautiful lands. To him, if he can do that, is revealed endless prophecies. And what is that? About his own glorious future. Now, how can he come by it? Again, he has to clear the way for it. He has to do it by his own will and effort. No guru can help him. We have to remember that, even us theosophists, we always look up to a leader to do something for us. That will never happen. The leader may say something, but unless we are prepared to work for it ourselves, what the leader says may go above our heads. So to close, I don't want to go on and on endlessly prophesying. Now, this is also quoted by HPB in The Secret Doctrine, and it is in volume 5, page 339. She comments on what is envisaged in the Vishnu Purana, one of the mythological texts, at the close of the Black Age. And I would like to end this talk by that good note, optimistic note. It is stated, to quote HPB, at the close of Kali Yuga, our race, people, it is said, through suffering and discontent, will become more spiritual. Through suffering and discontent will become more spiritual. Now we see that trend towards that already. As I said, particularly among our young people in the West, seeking for the deeper values. Of course, the astrologers were saying these are the signs of the Aquarian age or the next age of Capricorn to come. Whatever it is, we see the breaking up of traditions. Perhaps some traditions too much cherished by us, but there it is breaking off before our very eyes through our children. All that limits one's freedom, interest in the spiritual side of life, though often, of course, misled, people taking to drugs and witchcraft and all kinds of things, passing off as spiritualism, spirituality. The recognition of rights of another, expressing in service. Now all this is, of course, is come by at much cost, personal sacrifice, suffering, mistaken paths. But one can see signs for a hopeful future in all this when the fundamental identity of all with the Oversoul will become a realized fact. The recognition of the divine in each person, a sensitivity to another's suffering, an overflowing of spiritual values. But again, only those who plow the ground and sow the seeds can reap the harvest of these prophecies.